It's us.
Hi.
We're the podcasters.
It's us. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Sam.
We're the Sibs. And you're listening to Swift and Swigs with Sibs.
That's right. This is the podcast where a brother and a sister discuss two of their favorite things, Taylor Swift and cocktails.
Every episode, we will choose a song from Taylor Swift's 200-plus song catalog. We'll each pair a cocktail with that song, and then we will break down our favorite musical mixology moments. Hey, Sam, are we ready for it?
I think we are.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Swift and Swigs with Sibs. I am with a very glowing Sam, just back from Guatemala. Hola, mi abuelo.
Hola, hermana.
Mi abuelo?
Did you just call me your abuelo?
I forgot. What is brother in Spanish?
Rachel did not take her Duolingo lessons in preparation for that moment.
No.
False. I'm not your grandpa. I'm your hermano. And yes, I'm glowing fresh off of a vacation in Guatemala with great friends in a beautiful country surrounded by beautiful people and beautiful food and so many colors and volcanoes. It was, I think, the best trip I've ever taken
internationally
in my life. I've been to a number of different countries. I've seen a bit of this world, Rachel.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, Guatemala is a place I've wanted to visit for so long.
Yeah.
It's my first time in Central America after spending time in South America and in Mexico. This was I dipped my toes in the waters of Central America, and I loved every moment of it. So yes, I'm glowing from that.
Oh my gosh. Your pictures were just stupid, annoyingly beautiful.
It was a beautiful place indeed.
I've already gone down the deep end of planning a vacation there myself because it sounds incredible.
Can I come with you? I can't wait to go back there. There's not a million places I've been that I already know I want to come back to because you just want to see so much of the world. There's so many places to see, but without a doubt, I will 100% go back to this place, hopefully. And I'm already trying to plan my trip back. So yes, I feel fresh from that.
Let's go together.
Vamos. The one Taylor Swift moment I had in Guatemala was when we were checking into a hotel in Antigua, Guatemala. The lobby was playing Style when we walked in.
Yes, they were.
And
did you just know that was the sign it was going to be a great vacation?
I beamed.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of music that we were sharing throughout, our week down there. And Taylor Swift never came up. I want to say proud of myself for subduing my Swiftiness in this group of friends that I was with. But when Style came on, I made sure everybody knew.
Yeah.
And the one thing I couldn't tell was if it was Taylor's version or not. So I'd like to think Guatemala knows to play Taylor's version. So that was an exciting moment.
Love it.
Yeah.
What else is going on in the Swiftie world? Do we need to report on anything?
I think the one thing I want to talk about is the upcoming Grammys. This episode is airing on February 2nd. The Grammys are on the 4th. So there will be a couple more episodes that you and I will be recording where we don't know what has happened at the Grammys yet. So I just want to preface Swiggies that's what's happening. This episode is coming out technically before the Grammys. But I just think it's important that we kind of start thinking about the Grammys and get excited about the Grammys. So that's kind of the Taylor stuff that's on my mind right now. We have seen her at the recent Chiefs games, but otherwise it's
ready
pretty quiet.
For that.
Pretty quiet.
Well, I had a fun Taylor moment last night. I did a Taylor Swift writing class.
Oh, pray tell.
It was just a workshop, a 2-hour workshop. One of my good friends and fellow concert goer, Molly Flinkman, is a writer for this writing group I talk about a lot on Exhale. And she was teaching this class. And it was kind of this opportunity for us to, she led us in It was a study on Taylor Swift as a writer, of course, because we were all writers in this group. It was a writing class. Study. And we talked about the ways that Taylor, or just her style of writing, mm-hmm. and what we can learn from that. We had some writing prompts where we like pulled ideas of our own based on some of the things. But one of the really fun activities we did towards the end was Molly had given us two songs. She had given us like this Google Doc that had the lyrics side by side, and we were to compare and contrast that, and specifically talking about the ways in which Taylor has grown. So it was usually like the first song was the one like in more of like her earlier eras, and then the second one was like later, talking about the same themes. So it was a way to talk about how you can talk about the same themes, or how you notice how you discuss the same themes, and then what you grow and learn from that. Mm. And you and I do that all the time. Sure. Like we make those connections, but it was so interesting to do it side by side, to visually see the lyrics side by side. And there were some connections made that I probably wouldn't have done. So one of the obvious ones was Red and Daylight. Mm, okay. And that was relatively easy to discuss, although there was just some interesting things that people brought up. But then one that songs that we've done both, and I don't think either of us made a connection, was Enchanted and New Year's Day.
Okay.
Two songs that I probably wouldn't have put together, but it was really interesting. There were some similar things, like obvious words like this. This is the very first page, not where the storyline ends.
And don't read versus the last page.
Don't read the last page, uh-huh. right? And then there was also like, please don't be in love with somebody else. Please don't ever become a stranger.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things that like we talked about was that like with Enchanted, it's like she wants this magical night to stay. In her memory, that's what she mm-hmm. wants is the magical mm-hmm. night. And she's willing to not even pursue the relationship in order to keep that memory, to hold sure. on to that memory, if mm-hmm. you will. Wow. And then in New Year's Day, she's like, you know what? Like the midnights are great, but like I want to hold on to the memories of cleaning up the bottles with you on New Year's Day. Like I want to hold on to the memories when it's hard and when we push through instead.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was just so fun, and it like opened my eyes to even more ways of starting to compare and contrast. And as that leads us into the song, our Swift of the Week,
mm-hmm.
I was really trying to think about that and like another song from a previous era and how she discussed some of these same concepts, but how she's grown through it.
She's grown so much.
Yeah, it was fun. Just a bunch of fans talking about fans that love words talking about Taylor Swift. It's like my dream.
They go hand in hand.
All day.
All those things.
All right. So I think that wraps up some of our Taylor tea. Shall we get into a very favorite segment called I'm Doing Good, I'm on Some New Shit?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing good, I'm on some new shit.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, you know, we're sort of prepping for the Grammys.
Yes.
I wanted to make sure that I go into the Grammys knowing all of the albums that are nominated. So.
Yeah, such a good idea. You know what? You did this last year and I loved it and then I forgot about it. So I'm glad that you're giving me a heads up to like remember to do
this. Yeah, we've got a little bit of week preparation. So. Now, a lot of the albums that are nominated, we've actually already talked about. Guts by Olivia Rodrigo, The Record by Boy Genius, of course, Midnights. Have we ever talked about that one album?
Here and there.
Here and there,
we
probably.
Dabbled in it.
Also, Miley Cyrus's Endless Summer Vacation. Oh, I know I've talked about that. Lana Del Rey's album, Did You Know There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard? Oh. We've talked about that.
Yep.
Okay. But there's one album that that's been nominated and I have just heard so much buzz about, and it's being considered could likely win album of the year. And that is SZA and her album SOS. So that's my new shit this week.
I don't know anything about that.
Then,
okay.
if you're not familiar with SZA, she's been a relatively fresh in the industry R&B artist. It's like R&B, contemporary R&B. There are really deep production sounds to it. This album mixes in a little bit of rock and roll as well, and some pop. And it's really deep. A lot of the songs on this album are sort of like, you can tell she kind of ripped from her heart. Like, it's very diaristic. And that's, you know, one thing that we love about Taylor Swift, of course. So I really was interested in delving into this album. A lot of great tracks on there. The one I wanted to mention as a standout for me is the song Good Days, which is about her sort of reflecting on the past and the issues that she's had, and particularly with the relationship, but looking towards and acknowledging that there are good days and leaning into those good days. All the world, I wave my arm, I'm feeling it's now. Still wanna try, still believe in good days. All sunny inside, good day living in my mind. Gotta get right, trying to free my mind before the end of the world. The sound of this song is very dreamy and soulful. And that's my new shit this week. I want to continue. It's a long album. It's over an hour long. So I feel like I sort of skirted through it just to find these standout tracks. And Good Days was the one that stood out to me the most. So I do look forward to going back and kind of really further listening and further listen to this album, SOS. And I recommend you do the same too.
So similarly to that, like, warm, soulful vibe. Okay. Do you know the writer Samantha Irby?
No.
She has written a couple of books that, of course, I'm not thinking of off the top of my head. She's actually one. What she's doing most recently is she is the head writer for the new Sex and the City reboot.
Which you love.
And which I love. And she apparently does these incredible playlists. Mm. And somebody linked to her winter one, which is called It's Chilly Time.
Love that.
And there's like a ton of music on there, much of which I have never heard of, but it ranges everywhere from like new stuff to like, you know, Al Green to like, it just like all over, like I think there was a Beatles song on there. Anyway, it's really good. Great winter vibes. She's got a few other playlists on there as the seasons go along. So I'm looking forward to kind of looking into that. There is a song that stood out to me with the one word, and then I ended up just loving the song. It's called Poems. Mm. It is by Mr. Jukes is one artist, and then Barney Artist is the other guy.
Barney Artist.
Yeah. Okay.
How fun.
Your mind might be going somewhere else than somebody named Barney. he's
your new,
like,
shit is Barney.
He's basically couldn't be more opposite. He's like this.
He's not a purple dinosaur.
No, he's not. He's not a purple dinosaur. this song comes from an album called Lock It that the two of these, okay, but the guys are so funny. Like, if you see a picture of them, Mr. Jukes is like this, he looks like he would be an IT guy.
Okay, wow, you're really selling like this to me.
He's, I know, this is why it's amazing. Like, you're like, wait, the two of you came together, some like white nerd looking guy, and then this like tough rapper, you know, artist from London, and you like came together and you made this incredible album. Like, it's fun. I just love it. I love a contrast. Okay. Yes. So that's impressive in itself. But this song is all about like the girl that falls in love with a poet, and he's like, I think you only want me for my words. Mm. And it's all about like, I'm kind of hide my poetry from you because I'm kind of embarrassed. It's a little bit self-deprecating, a little bit like the life of being the dude who's just liked for his words and not because of being good looking. Oh girl, man, you bad and you know it. Bad and you know it, girl, you bad and you know it. And I ain't even trying to
lyrics. I'm a mad girl, fell in love with the poet. Oh, bad girl, you bad and you know it. Bad and you know it, girl, you bad and you know it. And I ain't even trying to play the heroics. I'm a mad girl, fell in love with the poet.
It's charming and it's catchy and it's got this like R&B kind of hit that you love. And then I went into this album, Lock It. It's all great. It's all good. So
cool.
It was a fun find.
That's a fun
and
find.
Check out Mr. Jukes and Barney Artist. Yeah.
I love you and you love me, Rachel. We're a happy family.
who would have thought Barney would make our podcast?
It only took 57 episodes. By the way, this is episode 57. I don't know if we acknowledged that.
I don't know if I ever finished saying that. Yes, episode 57, season 2. And that leads us, Sam, into what Swift of the Week are we talking about for episode 57, season 2? You chose this song. Tell the Swiggies what we're doing today.
We are going to delve into a folklore track because we haven't touched folklore since the trilogy back in the summertime.
We had to give it a break because we did 3 in a row.
Sure did. And that break allowed me to really reflect on some of the songs on folklore that are more meaningful than others. And this, without a doubt, is one of the most meaningful songs on the album and most meaningful songs of her career, I think. And that song is This Is Me Trying.
I've been having a hard time adjusting. I had the shiniest wheels, now they're rusting. I didn't know if you'd care if I came back. I have a lot of regrets about that. Pulled the car off the road to the
I wanted to choose the song particularly in the month of January because there's a lot of discussion around this time of year about trying to better yourself. And some people choose to cut out alcohol. Some people self-reflect on their past during this time of year. I guess I already acknowledged this. Technically, this episode comes out in February, but we are currently in the month of January. And I just thought it would be a really fitting song for us to discuss for this time of year. There are, you know, themes of addiction and dark places and struggles with this song. And it's beautiful for those reasons. It's beautiful for the sound quality as well. It just has a lot of depth and it has a lot of meaning. And I feel like it's a very personal song that would be great to go into depth with you, Rachel. So
I'm really excited. Sam, the day you announced to me that you were choosing this song, I had been reflecting on my last year.
Naturally.
And I realized I like to choose a word of the year, and I never really ended up choosing one. The year was like wildly chaotic, and I never got around to my reflection. And I decided it was okay to choose a word post.
Yes.
Like, how would I name this year?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking about the word try and trying and how like trying can mean like to be really hard and to push you. And also trying means to try and all the ways that it means to try, to try the things to do your best. So I had that thought and I was like, this is me trying. That was my year. And then you chose it and I thought, hot damn, all right. That is good timing.
Sort of sealed the deal on that one.
Very excited to break this down with you and really get like dig our toes and into the sand of these words. Okay. But to do that, I think we should have some cozy cocktails with us.
Some swigs.
For this cocktail, I didn't pour the whiskey. Okay. I thought of a lot of different cocktails. I could have done a cocktail without whiskey. I could have come up with some really like warming. And in fact, the cocktail I came up with would be fantastic with a splash of rum or brandy. But I did make a dry cocktail because I was thinking about how the song can very much be a song to connect with if you are someone who deals with addiction. We are in the middle of dry January. Mm-hmm. I had a cocktail last week that was like a lighter, I think it was even a sober cocktail. Am I remember? Maybe last couple of times I have had cocktails that have kind of in that like dry or damp or however you want to talk about it, lower alcohol content for January. So I've already had that on my mind. And I have a cocktail cookbook from our sister Emily called Dry. And there's a lot of really interesting ways in which you can make cocktails that don't have any alcohol in them. Mm. Stumbled upon this one and it could not have been more perfect. It is a warm tea-based cocktail where you make a like black chai tea, kind of your own black chai tea. I added it. I steeped it with some vanilla bean and cardamom pods and anise and a star anise and cloves, black tea. And then after you steep that, you strain it and you serve it hot with coconut milk in it.
Yum.
So it's giving, well, let's just call it, this is me tying.
Tying like a tie the flavors of Thailand?
T-H-A-I. This is me tying tea. Okay.
Okay.
So, and it's delicious. It's all of the things I mentioned. It's warm. It's cozy. The song is, you kind of need some cozy vibes of like, I want to give you a hug.
Totally.
I want to give Taylor a hug after seeing this.
I really agree with that.
This is giving me that. Right? Okay.
This is you tying. That's cute. Okay. So I went in a very similar direction as you.
Okay.
Both in the flavors of my swig, but also the theme of it as well. I also recognized that this song can be viewed as someone struggling with maybe alcohol abuse, if we're going to be specific about that. And so I wanted to make a mocktail. I didn't want to use alcohol. That was my goal of going into this, is to use no alcohol. This is me trying to make that happen. It didn't quite. There's some booze in here, but I didn't pour the whiskey either, Rachel. So,
okay.
But there's a line that stands out to me the most in this song, and that is pouring out my heart to a stranger. So
I knew you would like latch onto that.
I do love that line so much, and so I thought of pouring out my heart. Thought of artichoke hearts. So I really wanted to make a drink with artichoke hearts. Now, there is chinar, which is an artichoke liqueur, but I don't have that. I couldn't find it anywhere. And again, I was like not wanting to use any alcohol. So I just bought a jar of artichoke hearts and I kind of elaborated from there. So that was the main inspiration. So what I ended up doing was thinking about flavors that pair well with artichoke, which grows in the Mediterranean region of the world. So what I used was this liqueur called Ratafia de Montserrat, which is this liqueur from Spain that uses a lot of Mediterranean herbs. There's star anise, there's cloves, there's thyme, there's sage, and those flavors. It's also like a nut-based liqueur as well. Just wanted to mention that. So I ended up using that with the artichoke heart and a little bit of that brine as well. And I thought it needed a little bit of sweetness, and I thought I've already put alcohol in here, so I'm going to pour a little bit more. So I added some sweet vermouth to that. So those are the two like alcohols that go into this. They're very like low ABV, and there's just a tiny little splash in each one. So if you are struggling, this is me trying my best to not have a fully alcoholic drink. The other thing I forgot to mention is I muddled some tangerines as well, which is a fruit that also grows in this Mediterranean region of the world. So, you know, the drink itself is interesting, of course, because you've got artichoke mixed with like this herbal liqueur and vermouth and tangerine, but it does marry pretty well together. Of course, you're going to get a little bit of that like saltiness from the artichoke and the brine, but there's nuttiness in there as well, which pairs well with this nut liqueur and all these herbs. And then it's somewhat refreshing as well with that tangerine in there. I am calling this, at least I'm trying.
Cheers to that. I'm actually really glad. I had this feeling if I was like, well, I didn't want to pour the whiskey and I wanted to make something sober. And you would be like, oh, well, I just made something with a whole lot of whiskey. And then I was going to make you feel bad. So I really like that we both like tried.
We tried.
And also I was thinking, one of the things I think I didn't think about in like our reflection of this podcast in the last year is that we've tried some really interesting new ways of creating cocktails. Mm-hmm. Like it's encouraged us to step outside of our normal, like,
totally. Yeah.
Shaken drinks, yes, et cetera, and try new things. I never would have thought to go grab some artichoke hearts and mix it with some random liqueur that actually sounds a little bit like the flavors in my cocktail, but boom, I want to try this someday.
I'm still sort of workshopping this. So by the time this episode comes out and we make show notes for this, I might have adjusted the recipe a little bit, but that's what I've got for today.
The flavor profiles. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So I'll be working
on it. At least we're trying.
At least, right? I'm trying. At least we're trying. Clink, clink, Rach.
Cheers. Clink, clink.
Are you ready to get into this song, Rach?
I'm very ready. You chose the song of the week, and I would love to have you lead us off. What would you say is the spirit of This Is Me Trying?
Right. So I've mentioned this a number of times already so far, but the spirit for me, this song is about struggling with either addiction or mental illness or a relationship or all of the above, even for that matter. But admitting those struggles and acknowledging the effort that it takes to battle them, essentially. Taylor said in the Long Pond Studios Folklore, the video that we have,
I'd been thinking about addiction, and I've been thinking about people who, if they're either suffering through mental illness or they're suffering through addiction or they have an everyday struggle, no one pats them on the back every day, but every day they are actively fighting something. Mm. There are so many days that nobody gives them credit for that.
Yeah.
And so how often must somebody who's in that sort of internal struggle must want to say to everyone in the room, you have no idea how close I am to going back to a dark place, or you have no idea.
Or you have no idea how hard it is to get to the point where you guys think is still shitty.
Yes.
You're often congratulated when you reach a milestone. Like, I have friends who have been sober for 1 year or 1 month, and it's really important that they tell their friends that and that they acknowledge how important that is. But what Taylor said is, you know, you'll have people there are there to support you for those milestones, but not everybody is there to pat you on the back throughout the struggle for what it took to get to that point. And that sort of weighed heavy on me, not in a negative way, but like that, I lingered on that thought for a while, how people go through these struggles, but no one's going to be there to hold your hand throughout it. You are left to your own journey to work through that, to try through that. And this song is about those moments in between the congratulatory moments and trying so hard. There's a part of the song, we'll get to this in the lyrics, when, you know, she's at a breaking point, or we'll call her the narrator because, you know,
right,
could or cannot be Taylor's perspective. The narrator is at a breaking point on top of this lookout and debating whether to go down, which sort of represents like a suicidal thought, or it could just mean like going down into a relapse, perhaps.
Yeah.
But they bring themselves back to the effort of that struggle. And that, in a nutshell, is this is me trying. There are certain theories. It's important. We talk about this every time we bring up a folklore song, is that she made it pretty clear that when she wrote this album, these songs are non-autobiographical. And we have talked about this where, like, surface level, I think she wants the listener to view it as not her perspective and not her story. But I can't help but really hearing Taylor's voice in this song and putting Taylor into the narrative directly. Now, maybe she is pulling from her own personal experiences and laying it out in a non-autobiographical way, but there are theories that could be questioned regarding this song. Is it about herself? Is it just a fictitious person in her mind? Is Taylor singing to herself? I also have this theory that this is James singing, and this is like a deeper perspective on James's journey with like his own addictions and his problems against Betty and August. This could be a song about Taylor singing to her fans. There's a lot of interpretation that can be made from this song, which is why it's just one of the most incredible songs that she's ever written. And one thing that she does so well is create these stories that allows listeners from all types of backgrounds and all walks of life to find connections in, whether it is biographical, autobiographical, or not. And I know that was a lot of things to say about the spirit, but I just had so many thoughts that I just wanted to kind of spew that out there. Do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, so, I mean, you touched on a lot of this, but Aaron Dessner was quoted in speaking on This Is Me Trying. He said he feels like it kind of represented the folklore album as a whole. Mm-hmm. And that as if that the album was her trying different ways of communicating. Mm-hmm. Different ways of telling the story. And I think you said it before, like we always go back, like folklore is a fictitious story, like as particularly as we talked about the trilogy of Cardigan, Betty, August. All of that was made up. But the themes, the themes that Taylor goes back to again and again and again in her music, she chose this time to tell these experiences through fictitious stories, which is another way of inviting a reader into these feelings. It's she can tell very specific details, as we will. I feel like 1989 is the most recent example of like very specific details of very exact moments that we can like literally find a paparazzi photo to prove the story that she's telling. And that's one way of her telling it. And it's almost like she's saying, this is still something that I'm struggling with. I have a documentary, Miss Americana, all about the struggles of that I illustrate in here. But this is a different way of telling the story and telling it through the perspective of someone who's dealing with addiction. Whether or not she's dealt with addiction herself, not only does it invite somebody who can actually physically relate to that, like almost probably say, yeah, I've been in a car and thought about driving over a cliff, and then I've gone to that person's house and said, I'm sorry, or I'm trying. I have gone, you know, there's so many ways that someone can specifically connect with this, but there's also ways in which we can read that and think of our own ways that we're trying and that it's a metaphor. So, stunning. Beautiful.
Yes.
It's really brilliant. And I kind of hinted at, like, you know, being able to connect to this, the word trying in my year. But I do this a lot with a lot of Taylor Swift's music when I can't necessarily relate to like a lover or whatever. I think of it as talking to myself. And so I do connect a lot with the storyline of Taylor speaking to herself or someone speaking to a past self, mm-hmm. and discussing the ways that they have not lived up to the potential that they thought they would, but mm-hmm. like being able to give and grant grace and love and still in the middle of it, right? Like right. still, the song is still, it's the literal, the words are, this is me trying, it's present tense. Correct. So we're like, we're deep into present tense in this song. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why it really weighs so heavily, because we're just like, we're in it and we're not rescued from it. And yet it's hopeful. So woo, we haven't even started talking about it yet.
But we have.
I mean, yeah. like being able to encompass the entire spirit of a song, I think guides the perspective that you go into discussing the next layers of mm-hmm. the music mixology, how it was mixed together to tell that story. And then specifically the words and the way that Taylor twists these words around to tell her story, to tell other people's stories. Okay. So that sets us up. Do we have any other spirits, or should we get into the musical?
Let's get into it. You said the word layers, and that's what I wrote down for musical mixology, is there's a beautiful layering of different instruments that come together in a very smooth, soft way. There's a layering of stringed instruments. The drums are really important in the song.
Oh, yeah.
Saxophone. Not only are there stringed instruments that are used with a bow, I feel like I'm hearing a cello, but there's also like a little plucking of strings as well. There's piano softly in there, there's a synthesizer, and it's all just so beautifully balanced. One of the favorite musical parts I have of this song is the intro. The intro is long. It's just an instrumental introduction until that first verse. It repeats itself. And I feel like that length of that intro could symbolize the anxiety and the length that it takes to try when you are struggling. Yeah. Like it's not a quick journey from A to B. It's long and drawn out. And I thought that was really an important thing to bring up.
That's so, okay, I hadn't made that connection, but I'm thinking of the line that we'll get into later is, I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if you can imagine the narrator showing up at the doorway as she sings, knowing she needs to say something and can't quite get the courage yet. Like she's just right. silent there thinking of, how am I going to tell this story? I'm so scared. And you're right. Mm-hmm. That like leads into the tension. I love the drums and the way yeah. that like the drums kind of give you this beat and you think you're flowing along. And then it stumbles. I didn't know how else to say it, but like it almost feels like you think that you're moving along and then you stumble. And it has this like yeah. kickback. And that just felt very like metaphorical, you know, that you think you're moving along and then you have this stumble again. And that's what mm-hmm. it feels like to try, to keep trying, keep trying, keep trying.
Hi, Future Sam here, editing this episode, and I realized that apparently the recording stopped when we were discussing the lyrics. So we were just talking about the first verse. I have a hard time adjusting. I had the shiniest wheels, now they're rusting. I didn't know if you'd care if I came back. I have a lot of regrets about that. And I'm just going to fill you in on basically what we're discussing and how we kind of tied this part to Reputation Taylor, how she had to come back from, you know, hiding. And she didn't know if
we would care if she came back. We were definitely tying this into Taylor sort of talking about her fans, like putting this into her own personal narrative. And that's all for now. Let the episode continue.
This has happened to me before, that if I've gone through a moment of depression, I pull back from the world. So like, I don't respond to text messages. I don't keep up with social media. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, like, you let a lot of balls drop when you've pulled out, when you have, what's the line? I didn't know, and you don't know if those people will care. Like, well, they're not missing me. Like, they're going on with their lives, and right. Not realizing that other people are like, hey, I miss you and I care about you. And then I often have a lot of regret about like the way that depression really pulls me out of it. So I think while yes, I agree, I am totally mm-hmm. connecting it to Taylor's Reputation era. I think the beauty of the song is that we can relate to that. Like, we can relate to the ways that we do this too.
Moving on, I'm going to read this next part here. Pulled the car off the road to the lookout. Could have followed my fears all the way down. And maybe I don't quite know what to say, but I'm here in your doorway. Yeah. I did touch upon this where she's at this point where she's literally on a precipice. And she has an option in front of her to, I don't want to say to end it, because I find it to be, she could have followed her fears all the way down. I get the impression that that means following down a dark place, not necessarily ending it like in a suicidal thought, but following it into a dark place or going back into a depressive state or falling into a relapse, perhaps. Could have followed my fears all the way down.
Yeah.
Is implying didn't. Yeah. Could have, but did not. And that the trying, right? That is her laying it out there. This is me trying. I could have done that, but I didn't. And then this is like what this next part is what really makes me wonder if this is another branching of James's story. And maybe I don't quite know what to say, but I'm here in your doorway. Just like he sings in the song Betty, that he's in her doorway and he's planned it out for weeks now, but it's finally sinking in. Like he's planned it out, but it's happening and he doesn't quite know what to say. And I think what's also interesting is the concept of the doorway is like she or the narrator isn't in the home. Like she's on the edge of that person's, like, of being let in to that person. She's at the doorway.
Maybe I don't quite know what to say, but I'm here in your doorway. Betty, I'm here on your doorstep, and I planned it out for weeks now, but it's finally sinking in.
That leads us into the chorus, Rachel.
Yeah.
Which is just the same line repeated twice. I just wanted you to know that this is me trying. I think that's what she's like, I don't quite know what to say, but I just want you to know that this is me trying, which this is me trying is her way of saying, I know I'm struggling and I know that you can see that. I'm not perfect, but that doesn't mean that I'm failing at this. I want you to know that, like, I might be in a place that's not where I'm supposed to be, but what I need you to know is I am trying and I do care about that.
I just wanted you to know that this is me trying. I just wanted you to know that this is me trying.
I love the maybe I don't know what to say. It's very honest and there's not a resolution. And the song leads us into the way that she repeats herself. I just wanted you to know that this is me trying. I just wanted you to know that this is me trying. We've said it before, but I think she's coming to an awareness that she didn't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you, except that maybe this is just me trying, right? Like and coming to an awareness of forgiving herself and recognizing like, wait, that's what this looks like. Like that's what trying looks like. This, whatever this is that it's so hard to even name. I'm trying. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying. Yeah.
Let's go on to the second verse. Let's do it. They told me all of my cages were mental, so I got wasted like all my potential. And my words shoot to kill when I'm mad. I have a lot of regrets about that. I immediately thought of Champagne Problems with this one, where she, you know, she...
Because a champagne has a cage on top of the bottle. Exactly, uh-huh. A champagne cage that you have to remove.
Yeah, nope. Not that one. That she's identifying that she is... A lot of people think that her, like, would describe her problems as being champagne problems, if you were. Like,
right.
Like, all these pages that you say, that all these problems that people say that, like, have, you know, everything you talk about in Miss Americana, like, oh, I'm just, like, I want people to like me, and this is so hard for me, and, like, whatever, that's all in your head. Champagne problem. Like, we would love to have those kinds of problems. Like, that's all in your head.
Yeah, and I think that she's saying that, she's acknowledging that she does have these cages that she feels trapped in, but she feels like they're not being justified because people are just saying it's all in her head.
Exactly.
She is feeling like she is in a cage, a figurative cage, but everyone's just saying that's just in your head.
Like, get over yourself. Like, you're fine.
Right. Right. And that was hard. And that is a hard thing to be in. And it's frustrating. So she got wasted, like all my potential. Now, do you think she's like literally talking about drinking alcohol to the point of getting wasted?
Well, I feel
like there's a deeper meaning behind the term wasted.
I think if you're taking it from this, like, oh, I was writing a song about addiction, that's like a perfect line for that. That of course you would get wasted if you're struggling with alcoholism. You would get wasted because that's how you're dealing with it. Yeah. Almost like you numb yourself. You numb to the feelings, like you get wasted so that you don't feel that all the ways that you don't want to feel, like all the anxieties you have, all the depression you have. You get wasted. You numb yourself however you like to numb yourself, or you just pretend it doesn't exist. And in so doing, you feel like you're just wasting like the potential that you could be. And this is a moment where she's just like thinking about, the narrator is thinking about what they used to think they could be and how this, like the mental health is really like blocking it. And it's like giving in, like, well, if I can't be who I was, I might as well just like forget about it and just numb myself to it and try not to care.
I kept trying to connect this to her career. Like she had potential in her career, and that maybe she felt that her trajectory wasn't going in where she wanted it to be, and so the potential that she had as a young artist or as an up and coming, you know, or as a great songwriter was being wasted because she's focusing too much on the struggles.
Well, I was actually thinking if you want to tie it specifically, it goes back to reputation. So, like, she wasted her time. She might, she might be able to, if she was in a dark place during that time, she would say she was wasting her potential by just going dark and walking away from all the problems instead of dealing with it. Or writing songs, maybe, when she's mad and... That leading us into my word shoot to kill when I'm mad. A very relatable line to me. The way that I deal with my depression is it comes out in anger, and I've said words that I do not like, that I regret a lot.
Yeah. And this feeling that she was having of being in this cage and people not recognizing, you know, where she was coming from, that just fueled that anger. And so she's lashed out in the public eye. She's lashed out in interviews. She's lashed out at people through her songs. She is a mad woman, admittedly, I think. And even in the song Mad Woman, there's a scorpion sting when fighting back. They strike to kill and you know I will. She does acknowledge that her birds shoot to kill, but she doesn't like that. I have a lot of regrets about that. It, like, she wishes she could be a better version of herself. Again, she's trying, but these are all the things that she's identifying that are what she's going through and what are her struggles and her self-identified problems. It's me, hi, I'm the problem.
Right. And I was thinking that I think her folklore, Evermore, Midnight's eras are some of the most vulnerably honest that she's been about her own self. And it's and like the things that she struggles with. And it's almost like she's like before, instead of writing a song about like struggling with mental health, she just decided to write an entire album about being pissed off at Kanye, right? And so like and so that's how she dealt with that. And maybe she has regrets, not that she said those words, not that she shouldn't have said those things, but that she didn't actually say this, say, hey, like that hurt me a lot and I struggle with this and maybe you do too, but I'm trying. Okay. I was so ahead of the curve. The curve became a sphere. Fell behind on my classmates and I ended up here pouring out my heart to a stranger, but I didn't pour the whiskey.
Yeah, that line, I was so ahead of the curve. The curve became a sphere is so interesting.
It is.
I think I you know, being ahead of the curve is a term, like the curve is the standard of like often used in a classroom setting. The curve is how you rank the entire class knowledge as a whole. And the curve is like the standard, almost like the average. And she was ahead of that. I think in her career, absolutely. Considering she started her debut at such a young age and has been critically acclaimed ever since for being sort of like the genius that she is. And that put her ahead of the curve. But it got to the point that she was so ahead of the curve that this curve, this literal curve, I guess a figurative curve, you know, just completely wrapped up into itself as if it was a sphere, to the point where there was never an end. She kept going around and around, almost like a loop, a continual loop where she, it's like she couldn't reach the, like the pressure that was maybe weighing on her, that it just kept going in the cycle. Like she needed to get better and better and better, but it just kept going into the cycle. And I think that's what she's trying to describe.
Yeah. I mean, I totally think, you know what I've thought of with the next line too, I fell behind in my, with my classmates and end up here. She says a line in Miss Americana that like, there's this idea that pop stars are frozen at the age that they become famous. And she does talk a lot about being young and what that means to be young and if it's okay to be young, if it's okay to feel young or be frozen in those young thoughts, those immature thoughts. Sometimes she's okay with it. Sometimes she's like, sometimes she's not. And I think this is an indication of her just kind of talking about the ways that maybe her classmates moved on with their lives and without her, and she's still stuck in these same spherical, like this idea of trying to be these better cycles. Than the cycles, and she can't get past it because she hasn't been able to be honest about the things that she struggles with, because she has to, you know, be impressive all the time. And that's what she thought.
She has to be ahead of the curve. Yes. She has to like maintain where she's been put into by, you know, the standards that have been put upon her. I mean, it's easy to call it a champagne problem, right?
Right.
Because
right.
like we're all, the 99% of us see her as this incredibly successful person. And, you know, what she's telling us here is that that's not what is necessarily good for her. Like to be ranked and lauded the way that she is actually like really detrimental for her mental well-being.
Yes.
Because she just kind of has to keep chasing this thing that we're all expecting and wanting of her. We say this all the time, like, Taylor, where's the next album?
Well, which is a good lead into the next line, pouring my heart out to a stranger, but I didn't pour the whiskey. Who's right. the stranger? Who do you think the stranger is?
I think the stranger is the fans of her songs, because she does pour out her heart in her songs, yes. but we're all strangers to her.
Yes.
Like she is putting herself always in these like really vulnerable, emotionally stripped, diaristic, confessional places to nobody that she knows.
Yeah.
That must be such a strange feeling that she's confessed, she's poured her heart out to millions, but we're not her friends. And in a way, that is therapy for Taylor. It's like we are her yes. therapists.
Yes.
Which is also a stranger. When you talk to a therapist, when you seek psychological help, you are talking to a stranger. That's the point of therapy, is it is an unbiased opinion from somebody who you do not know, who they don't know you. That's a stranger, and that's how therapy is helpful and beneficial. I mean, it's the same for her in her songwriting. We are the strangers. We are the therapists for her. We should start charging Taylor Swift, honestly.
We should really send her an invoice.
Yeah. Hope she's ready to pay that bill. Of course, the other stranger in a common, in a similar light is the idea of a bar and a bartender, yeah. which I know you kind of laid a chicken nugget about that earlier in this episode.
Chicken nugget. Man made a bar.
Man made a bar. Flashback to that episode when I talked about the song Man Made a Bar, which is, I'm not going to get into it, but the concept of bartenders are often viewed as being therapists for people who come, it depends on the bar, it depends on the setting, but like you picture a dive bar or an airport bar is oftentimes a great example of this, when maybe you're often on your own in an airport bar mm-hmm. and you will never see that bartender ever again. It's an airport yeah. that you will yeah. you know not visit again.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy to be confessional. But you also go to a bar to drink and to forget the struggles or to just cope with the struggles. And the bartender, in theory, is a stranger to you, but it's somehow like very therapeutic. In the industry that I work in, as a bartender, we often talk about this. I talk about it with my customers, how my position can be viewed as a stranger to talk to about anything. And it especially helps where I work. We don't have any televisions. So the only thing to do at my bar is to sit and talk with others. Most oftentimes it's a stranger, whether that's a bartender or the stranger sitting next to you. But that goes back to this theme of drinking and addiction mm-hmm. and how those are tied into each other, talking to a stranger at a bar perhaps. But I didn't pour the whiskey. I poured my heart out, but I didn't pour the whiskey.
Pouring out my heart to a stranger, but I didn't pour the whiskey.
I think a lot of people will say that this line, but I didn't pour the whiskey, was... I was pouring my heart out, like we already know, like if it is back to addiction, but I chose not to drink. I chose to come to you yeah. instead. I chose not to fall down that. That very well could be it. I think another way I was thinking, because I was thinking about, okay, this bartender is the one that poured the whiskey. The whiskey is what gets you to pour your heart out.
Mm-hmm.
She's saying, I didn't pour it. The bartender poured it. The bartender, the fans, if you will, convinced me I had to tell you that I had to say all this. It's
or not so much convince her that she had to, but allowed her to feel the freedom to pour her heart out.
It's almost like, well, she's addicted to people liking her. The addiction is the fandom. Fans keep feeding into that. They keep pouring into her glass. Give us more. Tell us more. We want to know more. Like, and and it's like this again, a cycle. And she's saying, I didn't pour the whiskey. I didn't get, like, you wanted that. You lured me into that. I don't know if that's it. But I do think it's, I think it's an interesting way, if we're tying it into fandom, how we are responsible for putting someone into that place to begin with.
We are absolutely guilty as charged of fueling this addiction. It's not like something that we think is bad. Like what we're fueling is her giving us more music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I view as what she needs to write music. She expresses in a cathartic and relieving sense in her music. And so we are fueling that, but that's not, I wouldn't think that's a bad thing, because that's what she feels like she needs. But it kind of just loops into, like, the more that we fuel it, the more she pours her heart out, the more she goes back into these midnights, and the more her internal struggles are like, this whole thing is her trying.
Yes.
She's just trying. Yes.
She's just trying,
this
guys.
This is her trying.
This is her trying.
Oh, God.
Okay. We get another verse. I mean, chorus.
Another chorus.
Mm-hmm. And then we get, at least I'm trying.
Her voice goes so high in that part, and it sounds like she's like just getting it off her chest. Like, at least I'm trying. Like, she's sighing and she's like expressing in this really dramatic way. At least I'm trying. So at least I'm trying is a way to be like, hey, at least I'm doing this. But it could also mean like, at least I think I'm trying.
At least.
Like is she, it almost makes me wonder if she, is she questioning? Is this trying? Am I doing a good job?
Oh, I like that. I really love, we talked about this in the workshop last night with the archer and how many times she has a question mark in that song. And like inserting a question into a really difficult narrative helps it feel a little more relatable. Like, it's like, I'm still thinking through this. I'm still wondering through this. At least I think this is me trying, you know, at least I'm trying, right? Like, that's enough, right? I think. And talk about cathartic. Like, we're about ready to enter into the bridge, which I really feel like the energy, the way that this pushes through, I mean, it works really well the way that a bridge is supposed to. It really just like it like gets us from one place to the next and like gets out all of those feelings. Like, now she's getting more specific. And it's hard to be at a party when I feel like an open wound. It's hard to be anywhere these days when all I want is you. You're a flashback in a film reel on the one screen in my town. Like, you could, I'm reading it like the way that she sings it, but like that's what it is. Like, we've got all these like prepositions, a flashback in a film mirror on the one screen in my town. Like, it's like, it really just is like pushing and pushing and pushing. And you can like feel the energy that she has. All you can think about is what you, I feel like all she's thinking about is what she could have been. That's that flashback playing over and over. Like, I keep thinking about the ways it could have been different and I can't get it out of my mind. You're a flashback in a film reel on
one screen in my town. There's talk about the you in the bridge being her past self. She's singing to herself.
Yes.
So it's hard to be at a party when I feel like an open wound. It's hard to be anywhere when all I want is you. It's as if she's looking at the past version when she wasn't where she currently is. The better version of herself, perhaps.
The version that she was before, like with the hope and the potential and the like, without the messed up thoughts.
Yeah, but before she felt her potential was wasted.
Yes.
Or before she got wasted when she was sober, you know, metaphorically.
Right.
And then you're a flashback on a film reel.
In a film reel on the one screen, in my town.
Rach, we have talked about the word town so much, and how that doesn't, for Taylor Swift, she uses that word a lot in her songs, and it doesn't mean a place on a map town. Yeah,
Nashville or Reading, Pennsylvania, or New York City, or wherever she's
living. It's way more metaphorical for her. The town is to her a sense of home.
Yes.
And I know we've talked about some of these examples, but here's some examples I pulled up. In Dear John, shining like fireworks over your sad, empty town. Or Death by a Thousand Cuts, the only thing we share is this small town. In False God, which of course we discussed, staring out the window like I'm not your favorite town. Like, these are not physical towns that she's talking about. Exile, you were my town. Tis a damn season, it always leads to you in my hometown. Midnight rain, my town was a wasteland full of cages, full of fences.
Oh, I didn't make that connection.
Yes. And what I am picturing when she sings this in the bridge, if she is singing about herself, it's so hard for her to escape the thought of who she was before.
Yes.
When there's only one screen.
Yes.
And when you think of town, you think of small. In a small town showing the same film, like, there's nothing else to see but that one thing. It's hard to be anywhere when that is all that she can keep replaying in her mind. Like, she's just continuously letting us know she is struggling. This is a very hard thing that she's doing right now. It's going through. But then she just leaves that and continues that same message of, I just wanted you to know all of those things. I just
everything that's going on in my head, in my town.
Yes.
And I haven't said it before. And I just dumped it on you.
Dumped. Took a big old dump on that. And and this is her trying. This is her trying. This is me trying. This is me trying. I don't know if you wanted to say more about the bridge, but it just ends the song, at least I'm trying. Like,
well, there's this echoing voice that happens while she's saying.
It is echoey. I was going to say that.
Maybe I don't quite know what to say is what she says to herself, which I think, again, it goes back to that, like, I don't know how else to describe this to you because this is what's happening to me. All I can say is, this is me trying to be better.
Yeah.
You know, you get all the emotion of the struggles that she's dealing with, the things that are inside her head, these open wounds. Like, it's so hard to feel joy at a party when you feel like everyone else is having a good time. They probably don't even notice, but you feel like you have this open wound that's like, I am so vulnerable. An open wound is so vulnerable.
It's not healed.
Yes. She's not healed. This isn't a song that you sing at the end. This is a song that you sing when you're in the middle of it.
Right. Like you said, it's recognize, present tense. Like, she's in the midst present of it all right now as she's singing it.
And the music just kind of does that same way that it starts. It fades out.
It fades. Yeah, because it doesn't end. This isn't just like the end of the story. It slowly fades out. It's an ongoing journey that she's on. Wow.
That was good.
We didn't cry. This isn't us crying.
We didn't. I got out my tears before, so that felt good.
I don't have very much emotional connections to a lot of Taylor Swift songs the way that you or many other Swifties do. But this one in particular, it just is a time when I can really, like, I don't know, feel, I hope I don't get to a point of struggle like this in my life. But if I do, best believe I'm going to be listening to this song as a way to cope through that and to acknowledge that it's not a perfect journey to get from A to B. It is about trying. And that's the whole message of the song.
One thing we didn't really mention is the fact that this came out during the pandemic. And I think that that made it even more of a relatable song at that time, because I think we all were kind of struggling with trying to understand this new normal or new whatever it was, and probably making a lot of mistakes and struggling and like needing to tell ourselves, like, we're just trying. We're just all trying our very best.
Right.
Woo!
Guess that's that.
It seems like we've followed all of our fears of this song all the way down. And we ended up here at the end of our podcast. And so I just wanted you to know what song we're doing next week. And I also need you to know that I have immediately shifted my thought process based on when I realized this next episode will be airing.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like this is going to be quite the sharp turn.
Okay.
Of a choice. But I'm realizing that this song will air the same weekend as, currently I cannot say who, but I'm hoping that Taylor Swift's boyfriend and his work colleagues will be playing for the Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah. This next episode will air on Super Bowl weekend.
So,
you're right.
So I feel like we need to really give Taylor Swift's boyfriend and his work colleagues like a pump up song.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I'm also curious if that weekend we might get an announcement for, you know, a Reputation Taylor's version.
I have a feeling that's coming on February 16th, but we don't know. Interesting. We don't know.
The next song is Endgame.
Oh, yes.
The one song we have currently that has the most football-related puns to get us into a sportsy weekend.
Endgame, a highly, extremely underrated song that I love dearly.
Same. It's going to be fun.
That's a great one to get into the football spirit, Rach.
Fun.
Love it. Love it very, very much. Until then, Swiggies, we hope you know this is us trying to give you our very best on this podcast. Would you do us a favor? Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Maybe you don't quite know what to say, so you could just say, we're totes awesome.
That works.
Or adorbs.
Totes adorbs.
Totes adorbs. But we would just love to hear your feedback. So if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please kindly leave us a review there. Be sure to follow us on our social medias at Swift and Swigs Podcast. Leave us an email at swiftandswigspodcast@gmail.com and follow our show notes at swiftandswigspod.substack.com. And I just hope that if you are struggling or if you know someone that is struggling, you recognize the importance of trying. Rachel, we have been doing this podcast for a while now, and we continuously are trying to make this better and stretch ourselves both creatively and through the pros that we discuss. And, you know, I think we're trying. This is us trying, and at least we're trying, right? So, cheers to that.
Cheers to that. Clink, clink.
It's a nice sound.
That is a good sound.